Well, hi there. Welcome to episode 162 of the FlameFlash.net podcast. My words are my own. And it is October 4th, 2024. And here we are, post the vice presidential debate, which we'll probably be getting to in a moment. I am looking at the feed and chuckling at myself because I left the E off of the word episode on episode 161. Oops. Oh, well. And I'm going to be a little all over the place, I think. Just, it's been that kind of a week. Very, very hectic week. As we started riding the roller coaster down from Wednesday, things started to get smoother, but it started out quite fun because last Friday, we got together. I think it was Friday or was it Saturday? It's blurred together a little bit. I'm pretty sure it was Friday. We got together as a group, and it was the first time I ran a D&D session in years. I think it went really well, especially since everybody was pretty much a newbie. So first we had to build the characters, which took a good amount of time. But it was funny watching everybody who has not rule gamed, not read the books. They're just there to chill and hang out, which is all D&D is supposed to be. So the rule of cool, the rule of fun, definitely played a massive role. Like the barbarian player, for example, wanted, rather than to use his great axe, two-handed great axe that does 1d12 of damage plus strength, decided instead to improvise a lot. So I want to throw a rock. Okay. Well, let's use like the standard thrown weapon rules then. Roll a d20, add your dex modifier. If it hits the armor class of what you're throwing at, you hit him. And then we'll do improvised weapon, which is usually just a 1 plus strength modifier. And these characters are level 1. So there he is, chucking rocks at the opponents. It's like, okay, you're definitely a half orc barbarian. Got it. We had two wizards in the party, one a half elf, or one a full elf, and one a half orc. Again, these folks were there to play. They weren't there to power game or choose the quote unquote right build. A half orc, that is not typically the right build for rolling up a character. And he was even fully made aware that, you know, if you put a low numbered stat in your intelligence, you're not going to be a very successful spellcaster. I don't care. I want to be able to hit things with my staff too. So, all right, we'll roll with it. Otherwise, we had a bard dwarf and a ranger fairy that couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with their bow. I don't know what was going on, but her dice did not cooperate all night. Fortunately for them, my dice did not cooperate all night, because this was level 1. The barbarian was barbarying and getting into the fray quite often. And then I want to pick up one of these guys and basically do a Hulk smash, throw them around, use them as an improvised weapon. It's like, all right, that is definitely not easily in the rule book. So let's just roll a strength check first. If you pass that, we'll allow it. And he pretty much always failed the strength check. So there he is, just shaking the poor little kobold, which is, if you want to imagine them, they're like little rat men creatures. about the size of a traditional goblin in fantasy tropes. So there he is, half-orc, just shaking around this poor little kobold rat guy. All right, but they had fun, and that's what matters. Went from like 6 p.m. to 1 p.m. or 1 a.m. at least by the time we got home. So it was a blast. It was a blast. We are running a different session for a different group of my eldest son's friends tomorrow on Saturday. And I have a completely different story, adventure, book for it. So we're good to go. I need to do some more reading of that one because we're not going to get past chapter one. We're just not. Probably not. I'm going to prepare and read chapter one. Because aside from building characters again, I think we'll only get through chapter one. We're going into the Carnival of the Witchlight, if you're a D&Der and are familiar. So I'm looking forward to it. I've listened to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm definitely not a sponsored plug. When they played through it and absolutely enjoyed it. So I've heard it from the player's perspective before. Now I have the book, and I am going in to run it from the point of view of the dungeon master. So it'll be fun. And for those of you who are about my age, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, the ancient Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, where you had the little guy in the wizard robes with the glasses, that cartoon does not hold up. I'm just saying. I own the series on DVD, and the animation quality alone is absolutely terrible. But you didn't care as a kid because it was just fun story. And that's the way it is on these tables, or the way I'm trying to run these tables, is just come in, let's have a fun story. Let's relax. Let's play. Imaginative play. It's adult imaginative play. And we all need that sometimes. They heavily kept me on my toes, though. Just all over the place. The group split up. I mean, you don't do that. Especially the poor DM, but there they went. They split up. It's going to be very interesting. So, otherwise, gaming-wise, we have been still struggling with some other things. And we've dipped our toes into more World of Warcraft, a little more Helldivers, but for the most part, we've been focusing on getting the crises under control. And season 3 of Vox Machina over on Amazon Prime just came out. If you're a D&D fan, and even if you're not, this is a very adult cartoon. Not saying that there's going to be some like Bow Chicka Wow Wow or anything like that. Just some of the jokes, especially in season 1 before the characters really understood their voices, are cringy. Like the bard halfling that wants to boink everything. It's just, it's off-putting. And honestly, we rooted for that character to die during season 1. But the character has been allowed to grow. And so if you can push past the cringe and frankly, the multitude of HR violations, it's an enjoyable show. Just putting that out there. Not overly politically correct. My favorite character is Grog, who is like he's the dumb barbarian, the stereotypical funny dumb barbarian, and it's great. I love it. So that's our entertainment piece. Wow, we're already to 9 minutes. Thank you. Let's shift gears and go over to the political, because this last week we had the vice presidential debate. And leading up to it, I saw a lot of social media posts with some pretty decent misinformation floating around. So, for example, Governor Walz is being attacked over quote-unquote ethnic studies. This is just the old dog whistle, critical race theory, conspiracy nut job stepping in and probably using a script out of ChatGPT to do a quick edit without any actual research. So they're going after Walz and the education system in Minnesota because there's some kind of a ethnic studies. Now, this was brought to my attention by my mom, actually. I don't think she listens to the podcast, but if she does, hi, Mom. Because she just, knowing that I am an individual that has a master's in the political science realm, wanted my input on it because her siblings were passing this particular article around. And that's all it is. It's garbage. It's conspiracy theory garbage. Trying to get the think of the children pearl clutchers all up in arms when there's really nothing there. Critical race theory, there's really nothing there. All we're trying to do when properly educating individuals is teach the full width and breadth of history like we should. We should not be revisionist. We should not be editing out things. We should not be leaving out things. Germany doesn't leave anything out. They fully acknowledge how much they culturally screwed up during World War II and the lead up to World War II and how it all happened. They know they're a cautionary tale and they, I wouldn't say embrace it. That's not the right word at all. But they acknowledge it and they teach their history, both the good and the bad. When people start screaming critical race theory or ethnic studies, what you see in the background, you need to look in the background and see who's talking and what are they actually talking about? Are they angry that Americans aren't always the good guys? The white United States military, for example, aren't always the good guys, or the United States government isn't always the good guys. So what they're trying to do is leave out things like the World War II Japanese internment camps, the Chippewa Trail of Tears, the Dakota slaughter of 38 innocent Dakota individuals here in Minnesota. That's what they're going after. They're trying to pad away these darker spots of our history. And I'm sure there are more. Those are just the highlights that immediately come to mind. I am basically a third Native American. So, of course, a couple of them are going to be Native American that I bring up. And they're there. Darker pieces of history. It's not ethnic studies to point out that they happened, but we need to learn from them, move past them, and treat everybody fairly and equally like the Constitution says. Going right back to that theme of it's good enough for me, but not for thee. We have to keep in mind that it's good enough for everybody. That's not a Republican or a Democrat thing. That's just people. That is the golden rule for people. And we need to be embracing it. And we need to be being nice. That's all. Please don't take it personally when potentially your ancestors owned slaves. Please don't take it personally if your ancestors possibly were escorting Native Americans along the Trail of Tears. It happened. It's history. It's in the past. Nobody's going after you, you personally, for those things, those, frankly, crimes against humanity. They happened. They're done. They're gone. Your taxes aren't going to go up. It's just there. It happened. And the dog whistle of critical race theory or ethnic studies, why don't we learn about everybody else? Let's learn about everybody else. Let's respect everybody else, whether it be the Israeli citizen who is for the war in Gaza or against the war in Gaza, or the Palestinian citizen that never supported Hamas and now is suffering from it, or the Palestinian that did support Hamas. I'm not asking anybody to choose a side. I'm just asking everybody to close their mouths and open their ears. Let's listen. Then we choose maybe a side. Then we choose what we feel is right. Because there aren't absolutes. We are not the Sith. We are not dealing with absolutes. There are shades of gray. Personally, for example, I think the Biden administration should be taking a much stronger stance on trying to force Israel's hand to go to the negotiating table for a ceasefire. But we're not. Maybe Harris will do that. I don't think Trump would. I think he'd probably pull us deeper in and try to use this as a way to go and invade Iran, frankly. I'm worried about that. But we're not there yet. I'm just drawing from history. I'm drawing from the past. And sitting American presidents love to use attacks and war as a distraction for issues at home. It's happened plenty of times. Bill Clinton did it. Both Bushes did it. So it's not a party line thing either. It just happens. But the other thing that was highlighted in the debate too is that the Minnesota stance on abortion is to stay out of it. Leave it up to the doctor and the individual. It's a hard enough choice as it is. We don't need to be putting up legislative roadblocks. So it came up in the debate, just helping clarify yet again. Not that anybody out there is probably listening, but I'm going to help clarify anyway. The VP debate itself. Just nice segue there. Vance is one slick individual. I mean, this guy... he's chef's kiss slick politician. He is old school Republican slick. And I have no idea how in the world he got attached to Trump, except for the fact that he's probably a Trump yes man at this point, because he knows he's one heartbeat away from the presidency if Trump is elected. And Trump's old enough, too old, to potentially make it so Vance would become president. So it's a calculated thing for Vance. It has to be. Completely. He's slick. Very slick. I thought the same thing of, for instance, Bill Clinton. Just slick, polished politician. He knows how to slide the words around in a slimy manner. And if you know it and recognize it, you feel like you need to go take a shower after watching the debate, because it's just there, this film. Meanwhile, Walls is very real. Coach Walls, Governor Walls, very real individual. He got flustered a few times during the debate. Everybody that I was listening to post-debate was like, Vance won that debate. But think of how he won that debate. First, they set up the rule of no fact-checking, no live fact-checking. That if you're allowed to lie as much as Vance did and conflate the truth, you're going to look better. Meanwhile, the individual who is being accosted by the lies, like Biden did in the first debate and like Walls did here, they're going to struggle. They're going to leave lies on the floor because there are just so many thrown at him that he can't pick them all up. He focused on the big ones, but a lot were left on the floor. The biggest goof, however, of the whole debate was when Vance himself refused to say that Trump lost in 2020. I was as flabbergasted as Walls because it was such a good, cordial debate. It was old school. We are two professionals. We have different ideas and ideals, but we're trying to convey that we both just want what's best for the American people. They tried to convey that. Vance's slime, given all the lies, really, he couldn't power through that for me as an audience member. I'm sure he did for others, but he didn't successfully do that for me. I still fully acknowledge that he probably won the debate. He did a very good job. But the fact that he deflected back at Harris about First Amendment concerns instead of answering the question of if Trump lost 2020 is absolutely incredible. We really have sunk so far as to be in revisionist history mode, to be in gaslighting mode, and it shows in the cult. My mom out on Facebook just yesterday posted a very anti-Trump, first an article and then a status post. And she is a wonderful lady with a huge heart, speaking from the heart, how alarmed she is and hurt she is that family and friends that she has loved and respected for years would support Trump. I remember trying that in 2016. And the cultists instead just unfriended me on Facebook in droves. I've already been through that. I've already seen it. I don't know if she was this outspoken in 2016. Because 2016 was, I believe, prior. I'd have to do the math. 2016 might have been right around when we found each other. And so we were still testing the waters, trying to learn about each other. But here we are now in 2024. And she just posted her honest opinion. Some folks, you know, showed up in support. One offered to pick her up a Harris Walls yard sign, for example. And then out of the woodwork come the cultists. And that's all you can say about them, really. Because it was conspiracy theory, bullet point, after conspiracy bullet point. And I'm not going to give any of them the time of day here. But of course I stepped in and defended my mom. And I called them out on it. It's like, you're just spouting conspiracy theories with no academic credible sources. Give me some academic credible sources for all of these claims that you're making. I'm showing up here in support of my mom. That's why I'm here. You're the one making all of these claims, so you're the one that needs to back them up. And each one of these individuals, first they're doing the ha-ha emote on the like on the responses, on my responses, because that's turning it into a condescending thing, which I've seen a lot of GOPers do rather than actually respond, because they just don't have the verbiage to use on a retort. But they also go for the personal attacks. I reposted the cult. You might be in a cult. Because it's amazing watching what I talked about last week being proven point blank in my discussion. How dare somebody question my dear leader? I'm going to jump in and defend them. And I'm going to spout all of the quote unquote truths that my dear leader has said without thinking for myself. And that's what I keep calling them on. It's like, give me some credible sources. Well, you need to give me credible sources and tear these down. No, I don't. That's not how a debate works. A Socratic method debate. You have presented things. I have asked for the receipts. The fact you are getting angry about the lack of receipt of my request for receipts shows you don't have any. Oh, well, you're just arguing like a typical Democrat. No, friend, I am arguing like a rational human being. There's the difference between you and I. I'm still thinking for myself. I know who I'm voting for. My ballot is sitting in my bag right now. So when I go over to Son's place tomorrow, he's going to sign the little witness form so I can fill mine out and mail it in. And I know who I'm voting for. It's very clear who I should vote for, because one candidate has a mindless army of cultists behind them, and one candidate doesn't. But that's just me. I even pointed them out to them. You are welcome to have an opinion and a different opinion. But because you are claiming what you are saying is factual, I am going to ask respectfully that you prove these facts. Otherwise, they are just opinions and they're invalid. They're not useful when doing a back and forth debate and discussion. They're just not. I'll probably log back in and entertain myself with Facebook, maybe throw a few more memes at them, because that really irks them when I don't fully engage and try to go and respect them for being good faith arguments, because they're not good faith arguments. But I'm going to sign off. Thank you for sticking around, especially since this got a little longer. And I'll see everybody next week. This was episode 162 of the FlameFlash.net podcast on October the 4th. Have a good night.